Welcome to Corrittles. This week, improving professional impromptu communication. Questions discussed answers are, what is impromptu communication? How do I get better at impromptu communication? And how do I know how long to speak for in a meeting? Did you train all your managers on the Effective Manager Conference last year or the year before? Did they start one-on-ones and feedback and never really get to coaching and delegation? And is 2023 the year that you're going to push work down and do the important stuff? Maybe you need a refresh with just coaching and delegation, or maybe the whole of the Effective Manager Conference. Maggie will be happy to talk to you about the best way to serve your managers in 2023. Just email her at customerservice@manager-tools.com. When we think of communication, often when we write these casts, we think of communication. We think of somebody standing up on a stage in front of a whole bunch of people and giving a speech, essentially, or standing up in front of a big meeting and explaining something. Probably because those are the things we're scared of when it comes to communication. You think of the scary things. But actually, the majority of the conversation that we have, or the communication that we do, is in small groups, in small meetings, or one-to-one with people, or just our team, or a subset of our team. And it's not planned. It's not something that you think about ahead of time. It's not like a presentation where you've rehearsed and rehearsed and rehearsed, and you know exactly what you think. It just comes up, and you have to speak. You know, sometimes it's a phone call and you're literally gathering your thoughts, responding to the other person and thinking and talking all at the same time, which is difficult because they're all different jobs for your brain to do, and doing them all at once is always hard. And fortunately, though, it's a skill and it's one you can get better at. So we are going to try and help you get better at it now.
Yeah. And I think you touched on a really important point there, Wendy, which is when you think of a presentation or something that's more formal, you of course think that that's something that you could rehearse or practice, right? But we don't think of being able to practice some of the small pieces of communication that are informal or more casual. So our outline for today is, number one, practice. We're going to talk about practicing.
And the good thing is you do get a lot of opportunities to practice.
Yeah, I would say more than giving. I mean, guess it depends on what your job is, but most people have many more opportunities for those small pieces of communication than that big presentation. Our second point is communicate your structure. Hopefully that'll come a little more into focus when we get into the cast. Number three is write a note, then speak slowly, loudly, and clearly. Use and, not but, and end with a question. That's it.
So practice. So that the more you deliberately practice this kind of communication, the better you're going to get. And I wish there was a shortcut to this, the magic answer that doesn't involve hard work, but there really isn't. It's only with practice and actually speaking up and saying something out loud that you get better at this. It was always interesting when we took on young, like school age leavers, like between 18 and 20, sometimes they've been to university or higher education and sometimes they haven't. You can always tell the ones that had a job that involved being on the phone, because if they hadn't, they were hopeless at it. And you think, how can you not be good at a phone call? But if you haven't practiced it, you worry about what you're going to say. You can't think about it fast enough. You misdial the numbers, you know, that you don't ask all the right questions. You don't take notes. Actually, making a phone call is a skill and you get better with practice, and you could always tell the kids who'd had a job where they had to practice that skill.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you already said it. You said it's a skill, it's a behavior. You can learn it, you can improve it. I think a lot of people don't think of communication as a skill or as something that you do. You know, that example is so clear, but if you said, well, I can't imagine that anyone wouldn't know how to turn a wrench or hammer a nail, or, you know, something that, you know, a carpenter has been doing for 20 years and thinks it's super simple. It's the same thing. It's a skill. It's something that you do, right? And you only get better at it by practicing it and doing it more.
And it's the success you have that leads to the confidence. So if you're nervous about speaking up, you are never going to get better by not talking, because it's those little pieces of success. It's the, oh, I actually spoke out loud. Or it's the, I spoke out loud and everybody understood me. Or I spoke out loud and I made a point that I'm really proud of. Or I contributed to this conversation. It's those successes that build your confidence. And so without those, you never get confident at this skill.
No. And the thing about saying words or practicing saying those words is the only thing you can do is say them out loud. You can't do this in your head. It's the same thing with that hammering in a nail, right? You can't say, okay, I would grab the hammer and I would hold it like this. And then I would swing it and I would hit the nail on the head, because then everyone would do it right every time, right? In your own head, you're articulate, you're eloquent, you know all the right things to say, you have all the right timing, right? You have to say the words out loud in order to really do it and get the feedback. And I'm not talking about manager tools feedback, but get the input from what you did. And we all do this, right? You leave a meeting and you think, oh, I should have said this, or I could have said that, right? But again, in our head, we know what we would have said, and we know, you know, what it would have sounded like. And of course, it sounded great,
yes,
right, in our head.
I think it's the French idiom for those things. I think the French idiom is stare words or something similar, because it's the words that you would have said that you think of when you're on the stairs away from the room that you would have said it, which yeah. I always think is really clever.
Absolutely.
Somebody who speaks French can correct us. But it's only if you do it out loud does it count. So you need to make a decision that you're going to contribute once per meeting or once per conversation and find something to say. Now, we're assuming that you're one of those people who has been told by someone else you need to speak up in meetings and that your average right now is zero. Most people's average probably isn't zero, but if you're being told to speak up in meetings, what you're being asked for is probably 3 or 4 times as much as you're doing. And so we're going to start at assuming a low base. If you're doing once per meeting or twice per meeting now, just add one. So you can probably stop talking at 10, but it depends. If it's a 2-person conversation for an hour, you've got to keep half the conversation going. Yeah, exactly. If it's your team meeting, you know, you probably have to count per meeting. So your team meeting with 10 people, probably 10 times is enough. If it's a 2-person conversation, it's got to be way more than that. And make a note how well you did. There's some science around if you just write down your weight every day, you lose weight, because the act of writing it down makes you aware of it, and then you change your behavior without even noticing. So if you write down, if you make a note, if you count how many times you contribute, you'll start speaking up, because your brain will remember, oh, we're doing this and we've got to make a mark on our piece of paper. And then note how well it went. So did everybody get your point? Did you speak loudly and clearly enough for everyone to hear? Did they say pardon or what? Or I didn't hear you, or I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You know, like what feedback did you get? And hopefully that negative feedback will get less, and as you grow in confidence and as you grow with the practice.
Yeah. And sometimes the feedback that you're going to get is facial expressions,
yes,
right? Just looking around the room and seeing, you know, if people are nodding and smiling, okay, they get it. They understand what you're saying. They can hear you. If people have a twisted face and are not, you know, clearly they're missing something, then that's good insight, right? You know, something's not right there.
Yeah. When we say feedback in this, we're not talking feedback as in the feedback model from manager tools. We're just talking about what you get back from something you put out in the colloquial terms.
Yeah, exactly. So initially, you want to choose something to contribute that is positive or agrees with something that someone else is saying. It's just an easier way to enter into speaking up than disagreeing, right? Disagreeing is fraught with some, you know, potential pitfalls or some nuances. And so you want to just do the easier thing when you're first starting, right?
Yeah.
So if you happen to have a fear that everyone in this meeting is smarter than you are, then just camp on to one of the things that you agree with. And we have some examples.
So I'll be the smart person, because I never get to be the smart person. And you can be you.
All right.
If we set up a fast reverse proxy, we can speed up the website by 4%.
I agree. And I recently read that such proxies help with traffic spike management too, which I believe Bill mentioned as an issue.
Good thought, Andrew. Well done. Yeah.
See?
It doesn't need to be long or complicated or complex, which apparently means two different things, or particularly smart. It just needs to be in your voice out loud.
Mm-hmm. And if you're worried that you'll talk too long, this is a great little tip here. Time yourself saying something that you wish you would have said in a recent meeting, right? One of those stare conversations or stare thoughts, right? That thing where you go, oh, I should have said this. Okay, well, don't just think I should have said this in my head or in your head. Go back to your office, close the door, pull up your phone, and time yourself saying, this is what I would have said, right? That's it. And then you can judge that length against the meeting agenda. And if you were going to talk for 1 minute and the agenda had 30 minutes for the topic, that's not too much.
Right.
You're okay.
Yes. And lots of meetings don't have agendas, which is a bad thing. And we would urge people to have agendas. But if there wasn't an agenda, just like make note of when the topic changes in a meeting. So that you can see, for the first 20 minutes, we talked about this topic. For the second 20 minutes, we talked about this topic. And then judge it against that, how long other people were speaking for.
Yeah, and that's the good thing is you're doing it for a meeting you've already been in. So you were there. You heard the conversation. You know how long you guys talked about, you know, whatever it was, even if you didn't have an agenda, which sadly, more meetings should have agendas. But
indeed,
we digress.
Indeed. Let's not get onto that soapbox. Okay, so next is communicate your structure. So if you structure what you say, it helps people understand what you're trying to say, even if you're not perfectly crisp or you don't get the details exactly right. So, for example, if you start by saying, there are five steps, capture, clarify, organize, reflect, engage, and then you start to describe capture, even if you forget to specifically say, okay, now I'm moving on to clarify, people will guess that that's the step you're on when you move on because they heard the structure first. Whereas if you don't say anything, when you change topics, when you move to the second step, people will be like, well, wait a minute. Now what are we talking about? Did we change something? And where are we going? It's amazing how much easier it is to listen to someone who structures and tells you what they're going to, that old saying, tell them what you're going to tell them, say it, tell them what you told them. But that structure of like, this is what I'm going to tell you. And then the person listening can fit what you're saying into that structure. And then you don't have to be perfect.
And what I love about that is even if Wendy doesn't say, I am moving on to clarify now, I can assume that. But also, I also know she's got three more things to cover.
Right,
so exactly. I'm not going to interrupt her yet. I'm going to let her talk because I want to, right?
Like yes.
The amount of information that's there just by saying that one sentence, there are these five things and let's go through them, right? Like, oh my goodness, it's so helpful for the listener, for the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so there's even like really simple statements like, I agree, or I have a question are really helpful because I agree and it gives the person who's listening the indication that you're about to make another positive statement. You're about to add weight to what has already been said. If you say, I have a question, even if you say a statement afterwards and it's not actually worded as a question, they know you meant to say a question. And it's amazing how often, you know, people say statements when they mean questions and how simple it would be to say, this is a question. Because you can't see a question mark when you're talking. So there's no clue.
Yeah.
I mean, there is clues. There's vocal clues. But still, why not give people the heads up? I'm about to ask you a question to which I will need an answer. Think about the answer while I'm asking it.
Mm-hmm. Just that little thing of knowing that I'm going to be asked to respond, right? Answer a question or provide some sort of input is helpful for me because I know what to listen for. We sometimes miss out on these helpful phrases because we're trying to be efficient with our speech. That's usually the culprit, right? It makes it harder for others to understand us. So we oughtn't do that. Some other examples of, you know, helpful phrases that kind of lead us into things are indicators of time, right? So last month or next year or in chronological order, right? Those are things that help provide context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Or indicators of direction. So going back or slightly away from that idea or from top to bottom or from left to right, that this is how I'm about to approach this topic from this direction.
Mm-hmm. I also love the one indicators of certainty, right? Or levels of certainty, mm-hmm. right? So you could say, I checked on this, or I believe, or I'm not sure, or I thought maybe it was that, right? Just those indicators of this is how certain I am about this particular thing that I'm going to say.
Yes, because then if you say something outrageous, like Wendy says, it's a million and it's 1,000 because Wendy can't do maths. Somebody says, yeah. Wendy, did you actually check that? Well, maybe if I say, I believe, or I'm not sure, and I think,
yeah.
they'll know that the likelihood of my number being wrong is high. I'm going to tell you a secret. If you have a personal license, you're allowed to share a few, reasonably, show notes with your directs so that they know what it is that you're trying to do, or they learn a skill that you want them to have that you don't want to teach them. A personal license is more than just show notes and podcasts, but when you need it, show notes are really helpful. Go to managertools.com and look for personal license in the products menu. Okay, so next ones are indications of actions required. And if you recognize this, this is a good thing for email subject lines as well. But this gives somebody the heads up that you are going to need them to do something. So can you confirm I understood? This is what I heard. Or mm-hmm. I'm going to brief you, but there's no action required. Or I need you to make a decision. Or I have another example that might help. So it's like, tell the person at the beginning what you want them to do, and then they only have to listen once. Whereas if you tell them the story and then ask them a question, they have to go right back to the top and they have to think about it all again.
Yep.
So in the end, it's more efficient for those of yeah. us who like efficiency.
Yeah. I love the idea of just saying there's no action required, and then here's what it is, right? I mean, ideally, if there's a better way that I can structure my communication, I like to make it so that they do have an action. But if there's no action required and I just need to brief them, or I just need them to know this information or have heard this information out loud, right? Then it's more helpful for them knowing they don't have an action to take, or knowing that there is a decision and that's why they're listening. It's so helpful. Numbering your points also provides a strong structure. This has dual benefits. So it helps others follow what you're saying, but it also helps you remember or stay on track, right? We all sometimes, I think, when we're interjecting or we're chiming in and we haven't practiced or rehearsed what we're saying, mm-hmm. we sometimes are thinking mm-hmm. while the words are coming out, and that can kind of get us off track occasionally. And having that structure of there are three bullet points, or I have three examples, you know, A, B, and C, 1, 2, and 3, right? That helps us be able to keep our thoughts in order. And if we find ourselves getting off track, we at least know, okay, I still have to cover B and C. Yeah. Or I still have to cover 2 right. and 3.
I had 3 ideas. I've done 1. The other 2 were, you know.
Right.
There's an acronym or a mnemonic. I think it's a mnemonic. LATCH, L-A-T-C-H, which helps you remember 5 ways to categorize information. So that's location, alphabet, time, category, and hierarchy. And if you organize your thoughts in one of these ways, it's another way you can make your comments more clear to others. And it's also another way of structuring what you're saying to help you, so you don't get confused halfway through the sentence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We have some examples of this. So an example would be, I agree. The teams working from home will benefit by blank. The teams working on site will benefit by blank. And the teams working in both locations will get all of the benefits. That's an example for location.
Yeah, so we divide the groups into locations and we do 1, 2, 3. Okay. Another one, if we do by category, I think you're right. If I apply your thinking to our customers, we have public schools, charter schools, magnet schools, private schools, and boarding schools. So they're mm-hmm. different categories of things. It helps if all of the things are the same thing when you're talking as well. So that's one way to think of it.
Yeah. Our next point is write a note. You don't need to write down everything you want to say. Just write a couple of words that remind you of what you're thinking. So if you were going to use the category example above, you might not write out all of those words. What you would write is public/charter/magnet/private/boarding as a reminder of each of the categories. If you were numbering your points, you would want to use, you know, a number and a word, just a word per number. Yeah.
And the notes that I wrote for this section of the show notes say only write a note, couple of words for you, use structure and follow it. Because that's enough to remind me what I thought about, what I wanted to make sure I included. And the other nice thing is it saves you from blank page syndrome, which if you write anything, you will know. It's the same in a meeting when your mind goes blank. The blank page is not at all helpful. And those words give you a kind of flywheel. They get you started in what you're about to say.
Yeah. It's the opposite of the old advertising thing. White space.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Goodness.
White space is the worst.
That's the worst.
At least in this case.
In this case. Yeah. Writing your, you know, few words will help you structure what you're going to say too. So if you're going to make comments about Java tools alphabetically, and you write Java, Java C, RMI, JConsole, Java DB, it's obvious that RMI belongs at the end of the list, not in the middle. It might not be the last tool that you think of, but it does go last when you're listing them alphabetically out loud for others. Our memories look more like word clouds than dictionaries, and quickly jotting down what you can remember in that order gives you a chance to organize just before you speak.
Yeah.
Which is helpful.
Exactly. There's no way you're going to remember everything in the right categories, in alphabetical order, or whatever you choose. And so writing them down gives you a chance to quickly reorder them.
Yeah. And one of the things, this is just a small trick, I guess. One of the things that I'll do in a meeting is if I'm thinking of something like this and I make my list in order of, say, categories or say, you know, something, and I'm making that structure, what I'll do is I'll write the words and then I'll add the numbers mm-hmm. because I want to do them in order of priority.
Right.
And I don't know the priority until I've gotten them
until
all
you know
out
what
on the
they
paper.
All are. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then I'll do each word and then 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And they're kind of all over.
So if there were a secret trick to sounding confident when you were talking, this point would be it. It's mm-hmm. not in. The secret is practice, which is not, you know, I wish it weren't so. But speak slowly, speak loudly, and speak clearly. It's not everything and it's not a cure-all, but it goes a really long way to convincing others that you're confident in what you're saying. And sometimes you might be getting one or two of these right, but not all three. So you might speak slowly and clearly, but not at the same volume as other people or loud enough to be heard. Mm-hmm. You might speak loudly enough, but too quickly for other people to follow. And you might speak slowly, but you mumble your words so they can't be heard as individual words.
Yeah. And there's a good chance that if you're listening to this or this is resonating with you, you may have already gotten feedback. And again, not feedback in the manager tools model, although hopefully.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. But if you've gotten feedback about this, about not talking, you know, enough, or if really what you're listening for is if people have asked you to repeat yourself, then that's a great indication of, okay, I was either too fast or I was too quiet, or I wasn't clear enough. If they ask you to speak up, that's clear, right? You know you weren't loud enough. If you're not understood because of one of these three things, right? It's got to be your delivery, right? It's mm-hmm. got to be the way that you're articulating or structuring mm-hmm. what you say.
Exactly. So there is a podcast called the And Not But Meeting Ground Rule.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to steal from it. I recommend you go listen to the whole thing, but we are going to use and not but. And this is the reason why that we give in those show notes. When we use the word but, we separate ourselves. Everyone can tell that you want to make a different point or to disagree or to challenge someone. Everybody knows what you're about to do when you say but. You mm-hmm. don't need to make it crystal clear that you are disagreeing. It's okay to disagree, but let's not revel in it. Let's try and phrase it in a way that says, I'm not actually fighting with you. I just disagree.
Right. And every time that we use the word but, we can use the word and. They're both conjunctions joining two sentences together. But says, I'm about to disagree, and says, I'm building on what you said. We recommend that you begin by interjecting where you agree. Eventually, you'll need to interject when you disagree. Using and instead of but helps you do so in a way that reduces conflict, making it easier for everyone. And if you're thinking, well, it's not my job to make it easier on them. That's not the point.
No.
The point is it helps the meeting or the conversation be more effective, right? Coming to a conclusion, getting to, you know, an agreement or common ground. The goal of that conversation or of that meeting can't be to walk away disagreeing, right? We've got to come to an agreement, and it's okay to disagree to get to that agreement, but let's do it in a way that's effective.
The last point is end with a question. So ending with a question is the best way to make sure that you have been understood. And this is for, again, if you don't speak up enough or you don't speak more often, if you're more skilled at this, you might want to miss out the question when you don't want the answer. But initially, it's a really good thing to end with a question because then you get the feedback that you need. So hopefully the answers to any of these questions is yes, which are, does that make sense? So you say something and you say, does that make sense? Or did I get that right? Or do you agree? We're looking for some kind of feedback that we were understood.
Yeah. One of the other ones I really like is, was that helpful?
Oh, yes. I like
right?
that one. Yes.
Or does that help?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's the thing, though. Maybe the answer isn't yes. Mm-hmm. Maybe the answer is no. Well, sometimes I think that's why we're not interjecting. That's why we're not, you know, speaking up, because we're worried that the answer is no. Well, if the answer is no, you're getting valuable input, valuable insight on your communication. It's always possible that the person who you're responding to didn't make sense, and therefore you didn't get it right. And that could be based on them saying the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Right? Be prepared to consider that possibility. But also, when listening to their response, think about where did that disconnect come from? Did they get lost in your answer? If it's that they got lost, then you need more structure. And we talked about how to add structure, right? Did you miss out on something important to their understanding? If that was the case, then maybe you need to write longer notes. Did they mishear or you know, didn't hear everything? Well, then you need to be louder, right? Or you need to be more clear or more, slower, right? And so on. These are, you know, everything we've just talked about, kind of the culmination.
Speaking up in meetings, especially when you're more junior to everybody in the room. Actually, I think this counts. You know, it's terrifying when you're like 22 and everybody is more senior than you, but it's also terrifying when you're 42 and you're a manager and the person in the room is like the CEO or the EVP. It's still terrifying to speak up in a meeting, but it's a really important skill to master if we want to be successful in our careers. And if you read, what do you call it? Like postmortems of catastrophes or disasters, so many times they would have been avoided if somebody had been willing to speak up. And you have to have practiced speaking up and being positive before you can start saying things like, you know, I don't think we should take off because whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And don't let your insecurities or your shyness put you off making a contribution, because you have something to say. Otherwise, you wouldn't be in that job. And somebody decided they were going to hire you because they saw value in you. So get it out of your head. It doesn't help if it's in your head. You have to say it out loud.
Yeah. I know this is going to sound really, really insignificant to a lot of people, but sometimes it's as simple as when someone says, well, if there are no questions, we're going to move on. It's okay to just say, I have no questions.
Yes, absolutely.
Don't be afraid of your own voice being heard.
Yes, I love that. Yeah. Yeah, let everybody move on. That's awesome. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks, Wendy.
We'll be back next week with a new topic.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.